Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Living Free.
Welcome to the Living Free Show on 3CR Community Radio 855 kHz on your AM dial. I'm Anne, and I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present, and to acknowledge that the material and spiritual connection of Aboriginal people to this land was stolen from them. Each week on the Living Free Show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drug, alcohol, gambling, food, and other addictions. Our guests share their recovery stories and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Before we start, I'd like to remind you that the Living Free Show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm, and family violence. Please practice self-care and care of others when listening. Before we start too, I'd like to thank everyone from the whole Living Free Show team. That's Anne, Michael, Bill, Mitch, and that's me, Michael, Bill, Mitch, and Zakia for helping us reach our target in the radiothon. And to say also that 3CR is more than halfway towards its target of 300,000. Which comes from Radiothon donations to the individual shows. So please help us to continue with this and try and get to the 300,000. You can donate to 3CR today and keep 3CR on air for another 50 years. If you like your Living Free Show, please say that you're donating via us. You can do that by going to 3cr.org/donate. Today, I would like to welcome Janina to the show. Hi, Janina.
Hi.
Janina's been on the show before. She's a member of Al-Anon and Adult Children of Alcoholics. Just a reminder that the focus is probably mainly going to be, well, the focus today is going to be on recovery. Janina, how long have you been in recovery, Janina?
I've been in Al-Anon for 35 years.
All right. So Janina is has been in recovery for 35 years and is no longer living with an alcoholic, which may sound strange. But so we're going to talk today about long-term recovery and why we keep going with it long after we might be no longer involved with an alcoholic. Welcome again, Janina.
Thank you.
And just for a bit of context, would you just tell your whole story up until the point when you got to Al-Anon, just in about 5 minutes, please, just to orient us all.
Okay. So like most adult children, you know, I grew up in the alcoholic home. Dad was the drinker and mum had schizophrenia, which I didn't know for a long, long time. But by the time I was 12, I was aware that her thinking and her behaviour was very odd. And interestingly enough, you know, with the alcoholic, it's very obvious. Anyway, and I had two older brothers, being European, and my parents were also refugees after the Second World War, and I think that had a lot to play with what was going on in the background. So I, like everybody else or like a lot of other people, I ended up marrying an alcoholic and addict. And the two of us just recreated our childhoods, really. And after about 16 years, I had lots and lots of attempts at leaving the marriage. And then at 16 years, I managed to do it. And, you know, my story isn't just Al-Anon. A few years before that, I did a personal development course, which in those days was probably very out there, but I realised today the benefits of it were just so great, and I can't find it anymore, but anyway.
What was it?
It started off calling transforming or transformation or transforming your life, and then it became People Know How. And the whole course was started off by challenging our thinking by saying, is God black? Is God a woman. You know, there were six options that we came up with. We learned to meditate. So I'm looking at the mid-80s, mid to late 80s. And then we did body works and a whole lot of other things. So that really started me on the course. And then getting into Al-Anon, I left my husband within 3 months, but I had already made that decision to leave. I made that in January before I started my Al-Anon meetings, and I left him in April of 91, I think 1991. And I continued on, and I often say the longer I'm in Al-Anon, the clearer I see just how sick I was. I got involved with another sober alcoholic. Well, he started off being sober, then he picked up a drink, and then he got sober again. But there was just a lot of mistrust in that relationship. As a woman, I felt very insecure because of his sexual innuendos with other people. So that lasted about 9 years, and been free ever since. And that hole in the soul after I left him, so I was probably 58. That hole in the soul, and probably getting on to 20 years in Al-Anon, yeah, that hole in the soul just disappeared. I remember sitting down in my new home and thinking, oh, the tension's gone. I'm really happy being on my own. And then COVID lockdown solidified that, yeah.
So you got through COVID okay on your own because you enjoyed it on
I
your
loved it.
own?
I really, and it's that, it's the structure, I think, and not uncommon for adult children to have some sort of structure in their life. And I think that's what really appealed to me. Because left to my own devices, I can waste a whole day. But if I put structure into it, I at least at the end of the day can say, well, that was good. It was rewarding. I got a few things accomplished because I am a procrastinator. That still has not left me. And I think with these years behind me, I can just say, that's who I am. Just accept it. It might change, it might not, but I'm just happy accepting the fact that I am a procrastinator.
So am I.
But I can get off my bottom when I need to.
I fact that I found that acceptance of the procrastination is the first step to not procrastinating. So, okay, so that's the basic outline of your story. And the things that stood out for me then were where you talked about the first thing you did was challenge your thinking through that first thing that you went to, the program, and then you got into body work. And then you lost your whole, and then you took action of removing yourself from the dysfunctional relationships. Then the hole in your soul disappeared. And now you talk about living with acceptance of your so-called character defects, which are sort of like character defaults, aren't they? It's what we default back to every time we're under kind of any kind of duress.
And the word defects really challenged me in the beginning. I hated it because I came from that notion of I don't make mistakes, I am the mistake. And so I had a lot of trouble coming to terms with step four. And as I was saying earlier, I've done the steps, not necessarily Al-Anon steps, but I have done steps from somewhere else. And when I get really stuck and it's bothering me, I have no hesitation in just, okay, let's pick it up, let's go through with it,
The
work the
step,
steps. And I get such clarity, it's really amazing.
So that's a kind of a you could see the steps as that as the kind of structure that one of the structures that you find it useful to put in place.
When I get really stuck.
All right, let's go back then. We're going to be talking about long-term recovery, as we said before. So let's go back again to let's talk about the stages in your recovery. Starting with the challenging of the thinking. So, and you also mentioned that you, in coming to understand your mentally ill mother, the understanding was that there was something up with her thinking. So, can you talk about that a bit, about your own thinking and the role of thinking?
Well, I was probably 12, 13, 12 or 13 when I had friends who lived across the road. So I had school friends, but they never came home to my place. But I played with the girls across the road. We were pretty good buddies. You know, back in those days, we used to play on the streets back in the 50s. And I just remember saying to them, a couple of them knocked on my door one day, and I said, "I'm not allowed to play with you anymore because your mother is gossiping about my mother and something else." And I look back now and I realize that was the day that my life started to change. And I wasn't aware at that stage that it was through my mother's schizophrenia, but there was definitely a change. I became aware that there was a definite change in my mother and the way things were going to pan out for me.
Had your mother told you not to play with this girl?
I'm
Had
not
she become
sure.
paranoid or?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't remember anything like that. Because there wasn't a lot of conversation. Being bilingual and my parents didn't speak English, and we spoke very basic, our ethnic language, very basic. And because of the violence, Dad was pretty violent when in the early days. You know, it was like, say the essential things and no more. Because I'm back in my ethnic community now, and how much I've picked up in listening to the language and talking it is just so different from, when I was 12 and 13.
So
Like I couldn't hold a conversation beyond, pass the milk, would you like something to eat?
domestic stuff.
Yes, kitchen's that language, I think they call it. Yes.
So just to make this a kind of conversation today, I remember at the same age, I think I'm maybe 13, and I'm also a migrant. Which carries its own issues as well. I remember the alcoholic person in my life, who was also ha had struggles with mental illness, in the middle of a psychotic break, while I was waiting for my friends to come round. We were all going to go out somewhere together, and I remember them coming to the door. I'm dealing with this psychotic person. We were in a small flat, and. I open the door and I go, "Hi," and I just shut it behind me quickly, bye, and just go. And then I'm a different person with them. And I think that sets us up for that isolation, shame, and compartmentalization. It sounds to me like that was similar to what you were doing there in your neighborhood.
And I stopped playing with these girls, and they were my best buddies for, from the time we moved into that suburb.
So you can't remember whether you were instructed to stop playing with them or whether you took it on yourself?
No, I can't remember. No.
Interesting. Okay. So back on the challenging of thinking. So the thinking that I would identify in myself at that point was don't show anyone what's going on in your house, and just pretend you're normal like everyone else. That was the thinking that I got started to hardwire into my own brain at that age. What about you?
No, I. It's really interesting because, the whole street was full of migrants, and apart from one or two Australian families. But there was a house across the road where, and this is the same family, the husband worked, the wife didn't, and they managed to build a house relatively quickly because, a lot of people lived in three-room bungalows at that stage. And I could never understand why both my parents went to work and we were still living in the bungalow. And the other thing I really remember is that on payday, the father across the road always came home with some sort of treat for the girls, and there were four of them. And we never knew when payday was in our family. I never knew when payday was because my father drank nearly every day. Maybe once a week he'd be come home sober. So that was the one of the differences that really stood out for me. Of course, it was years and years later that I worked out what was going on.
Tune in to Billabong Beats Tuesdays at 11 a.m. with me, Gavin Moore, giving a voice to both Western Kulin and Kulin First Nations peoples. Join me to talk about philosophy and dreamtime stories surrounding the waterhole, the sacred fire, the land, the plants and animals. Billabong Beats, 11 a.m. Tuesdays on 3CR.
Consumer law touches on many aspects of what we do every day. Consumer Action Law Centre has lawyers, financial counsellors and policy experts who specialise in issues such as unfair contract terms and deceptive or dodgy business practices like excessive pricing or irresponsible lending. Consumer Action Law Centre provides free legal information and advice and pursues litigation on behalf of consumers experiencing disadvantage across Victoria. Consumer Action Law Centre currently focuses on getting justice for people who have been sold lemon cars, ripped off by insurance companies, scammed and denied help from their bank, or refused hardship concessions from telecommunications and energy companies. Find out how Consumer Action Law Centre can help you at consumeraction.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
The song you just heard there was Paul Kelly, Back to the Future. This is a Living Free show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you'd like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform or just Google 3CR Living Free and check out our website. Today my guest is Janina and we're chatting about living, not so much about just living with the family disease of alcoholism, but long-term recovery from the family disease of alcoholism. Okay, so Janina, you talked about how before you got into the 12-step programs, you did something that was very valuable, another program in the 80s that helped you to challenge your thinking. What was challenged? What sort of thinking did you challenge in that program?
Well, it was the whole thing about God. Mm-hmm. Although that didn't seem to, it only played a very small part, and it was a whole weekend. So that was a very small part. But I think it was some of the body works that we went through that we did, you know, looking into each other's eyes. And then we paired up again for about 10 or 15 minutes and we had to say, give it to me, and the other person would say no. We were instructed that we weren't allowed to strike the other person, and it was really interesting to observe our own behaviour.
And your own feelings, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. You know, the rage that would come up and, you couldn't hit them.
And you were inclined to hit them? You would have hit them if you had no inhibitions?
Probably. Yeah, I had that streak in me, yes. Then the one that really stands out is that I was raped as a child, and so we went through our best and worst sexual experiences. You know, the room was in darkness, we were on mattresses, and I just remember kicking, there were two people with padded cushions, and I kicked so hard and I knocked them over. So that was sort of releasing all that anger and frustration because of the rape, because I'd never told anyone about it.
Yes.
I think even to this day my family doesn't know. Well, there's only one brother left, and at this stage I'm not going to tell him.
Uh-huh. All right, we have to just put out a bit of a warning about that. We've already said that this show may involve very confronting topics. So I'm just going to put out right now, if that's been a trigger for you to hear about someone being raped in their childhood, you can call 1-800-RESPECT, 1-800-737-732. Or go to 1-800-RESPECT.org.au. We're talking about long-term recovery here with Janina, and that ease with which you said that there, Janina, just that's recovery, isn't it? To be able to say that out loud.
It is. It it doesn't hold me back in any way, I don't think, because, I think it was really dealt with. And then at some other stage, when I was seeing a counsellor, we went through that as well.
Yeah.
So it's just something that happened. I can't change it. I'm at peace with that.
Yes. So there's recovery right there. And that came from doing the body work and the same with the other thing about confronting rage in your body.
Yes.
Right. What was the effect of looking into someone's eyes? Because that's a thing I've recently heard was an that helps with trauma. Was that your experience?
Yeah, I actually don't remember. I just remember looking into someone's eyes, and there was, I think there was at one level, there was some sort of serenity and peace, and kindness coming back from the other person. Otherwise, I have very few memories of that program, but it was certainly effective.
Yes, and it was a counterbalance to, it's not an experience you would have had a lot of in your childhood with two mentally ill parents, basically.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Talk to me now about the process by which that hole in your soul, what was the next thing after the challenging your thinking and the body. Can we keep circling back to that thinking bit again? So how does raging against rape and raging against people saying no to you and looking into their eyes, what does it tell you? What does it reveal about thinking, about your thinking? How does it enable you to think differently? Sorry for the difficult questions here today.
Yes, it is a difficult one. I think it was just challenging my thinking, and maybe in some ways getting clarity, because it was isolation. It's isolation in your childhood and it's isolation in the marriage because, alcoholics take hostages. And so for me, it was just like, really breaking away from that family and getting out and meeting people, but also challenging, or not even challenging my thinking, but opening up to a whole new world of different thinking.
Yes. So getting the rage and all that out, getting your body's kind of settled with that stuff, then really opens you up to whatever the world's got to offer that you might want or need. Interesting.
Yeah. And then the other interesting thing I remember is that after the weekend, we have a dinner and our partners come in. And over the weekend, I was starting to find compassion for my husband. And strangely enough, when I saw him, it's like everything that I had just learned over the weekend had just dissipated. I could almost feel it going, rushing out of my body and looking at him. And realizing that he's not going to change. I think that was the biggest thing, the disappointment.
Right. So there was some compassion that drained away, and then there was a bit of clarity.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 And he did the same course several months later, and we never talked about it, but I didn't. Maybe things changed for him, but I certainly didn't witness any changes.
Okay, so how did you get then to Al-Anon? So you went to Al-Anon, did you say, before leaving that marriage or after? Or?
Yeah, I did a meeting in 1987 and 86, 87, and it was just down the road and it was a Friday night and I had three little children and it just wasn't convenient. I couldn't afford to have a babysitter. And so I didn't go to those meetings and for another 4 years. And it was probably the oldest son was in grade six by this stage, end of year barbecue at school. And these two mums got a hold of me and said, "You need to read this book, Women Who Love Too Much."
Oh, I remember that. That was really big in the day, wasn't it?
Well, you know, I read it between Christmas and New Year, and I don't really read a lot.
Yes.
Still read then, and I did it in a week, in between running a family and a household and a business and whatever else. And I made my decision, and I just thought, the first day the kids are back at school, I'm going to my next meeting. The other thing about that first meeting was that I really didn't identify. For me, it was like happy, happy, clappy, clappy.
Too much smiling and laughing about something so serious.
I'm not sure what it was, but I didn't identify. Some person grabbed me before I walked out the door and just said, just because he yells doesn't mean you have to yell back. And I hung on to that for 3 weeks. Today I understand why we have that slogan, keep coming back. Because what I learn has to practice. I have to reprogram my thinking and my brain. And if I don't keep coming back, then I will slip back into my old habits. You know, we talk about the alcoholic, but I wasn't sane either.
No. So talk to me about that a little bit. What sort of insanity? Sounds like yelling was one thing. What else?
Yelling and screaming. It was my children in particular. And I think the first thing I did with my children was to stop calling them names. You know, I remember hearing somebody say a long, long time ago, you know, they had more names than they actually had on their birth certificate.
Right. What sort of names?
Well, you know, you idiot, stupid, you know, all those kind of names.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the first things that I did, that I stopped calling my children all those other names, and I just used their names that were on the birth certificate. Huge change.
Any other ones? Any other
There was another
habits?
One. There was another one. So my oldest brother, and we discovered just before he died that he was on the spectrum, but, you know, we didn't know that at the time. And he had the ability to tease the hell out of me. And I always say I felt like a spinning top when he finished because I, you know, just go, or a dog chasing its tail. That's how I felt. And it was probably a couple of months into the program, and he picked me up for some reason. We were traveling along, and he started his teasing.
Yep.
And I could feel the butterflies or the moths or whatever it was in my stomach, and I just thought, no, keep calm, don't react, don't react. And basically our relationship changed from that time on. It was really, he stopped teasing me, and I think it became more authentic after that.
So he realised there was no point in teasing you because you weren't going to be coming back with anything.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. And so then you went to you managed just to keep coming back because one thing made sense to you, which was just because he's yelling doesn't mean you have to. When what other new ideas kind of came in that kept you coming back?
I shared this one recently. When I was at school, we learned about proverbs, and, you know, we were talking about one of the proverbs was about turning over a new leaf. And I figured, oh, that was a bit of a change. And I came into Al-Anon thinking, I need to change a whole tree. I had that much work to do. And I think the other thing too is that I realised that the second meeting I came to was, you know, two personal stories. They both talked about police and violence. And I thought, now they're talking my language. And I think that was probably the big thing that really kept me coming back. And, of course, later on, well, I can't afford to go to counsellors.
Oh, yeah.
This was, I could afford to go to meetings.
Yeah.
So that's the other reason I stayed. And I recognised too, because I had done some tertiary study earlier, and it talked, I remember hearing about family of origin, and probably about 6 months into Al-Anon, the penny dropped one day, and I thought, oh, Dad was a daily drinker. You know, can't see the alcoholic, what is it? Can't see the forest for the
tree.
And then that popped in, and I also recognised that all of my stuff is family of origin stuff.
Yeah. What do you mean by family of origin stuff? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, there's that saying, I think it's the Jesuits, so give me a baby or something like that, and I'll give you a man at the age of seven. So the personality is formed by the time we're seven. And a two-year-old will have a tantrum and throw itself on the floor, but a 40-year-old can't do that. But we learn to adapt our tantrums in a more acceptable way, unacceptable way, but we certainly don't throw ourselves on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that all of my issues really go back to family of origin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where I was programmed.
Mm-hmm. Now, I suppose Al-Anon doesn't use that language, family of origin, and doesn't even ask you to probe it all that much. It just asks you to start having a look at your own character and your own thinking and behaviour. But Adult Children of Alcoholics does, doesn't it?
Mm.
And you talked to before about it was important for you to hear about the police and the violence.
Yes.
And all of that. It's not all about... this is not, you know, all you have to do is change yourself and everything's fine. Everything's not fine if you've got an alcoholic or an addict in your life. So talk to me a little bit about what you learned in the Adult Children of Alcoholics Fellowship about family of origin. Oh, no, is that what I was going to ask? Oh, no, about.
Yeah, I think it was.
That's what the phrase was, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was family of origin. Yeah, we don't use that.
Yeah.
Don't use that phrase in Al-Anon, yeah. So, you know, when Hope for Today came out in 2003, I think, you know, that book has got so many different coloured highlights through it.
So
because
good.
It really started to address or at least highlight the things that I was doing, you know, it was my thinking, but it was also all those defects, all those laundry traits that I kept using. And the difference was that going to ACA was that it really spelt it out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Whereas in Al-Anon, it's slightly different take on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Al-Anon really has the solution and it's a much gentler program.
Yep.
Because we don't, what they say, we have to look at our past, but we don't have to stare at it.
Yeah, you can look back, but don't stare.
Yeah. So in my case, I had to go back and really dive into it.
Yeah.
And work out what were my major defects. There's that word, defects or laundry traits. And yes, they haven't gone away. They're still there.
I don't think they go away. I don't think
they
go
don't.
Away.
No, they don't. It's a disease of extremes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're at one extreme and then with Al-Anon, as we go through recovery, the extremes become less and less.
That's right. Yeah, the defaults are still there. I had a lot of mine come up and get involved in the last few days just because I've been indecisive about going on a holiday or something and suddenly all my procrastination and perfectionism all come out to make a big catastrophe out of it, but it doesn't last very long. And also I mentioned it to you that I was doing that before we started the interview, and that's the other thing of being able to identify that stuff and just mention it to someone else, and it just goes away, and you get sort of restored to sanity, as we would say.
Yeah.
Yep.
One of the most helpful things for me, probably about I don't know how many years into the program, into the Al-Anon program, I had a lot of problems with step 3 or 4. Wherever God's mentioned, I had problems with those issues.
Step three is a bit of a real tricky one about God, isn't it? It's about, I'm going to say what it is. Let's go into the depth of this. So step three is made a decision to hand our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. So it's problematic. It's very problematic. It's written in the 1930s and it's very problematic. Talk about why you had such trouble with it.
I think by the time I, okay, so it goes back to my childhood. So as a teenager, sort of mid to late teens, Mum was working, not sure now, morning shift, afternoon shift. Anyway, she used to go to Mass every morning. And through her schizophrenia, sometimes she would come through the front door and she'd be running down the passageway and start yelling and screaming and start hitting me. And, you know, for me it was like, well, you've just been to church and now you're turning into what we would call a witch. So that was the hypocrisy for me. And when I was 18 when I ran away from home and, or left home, right, we called it running away in those days. It was a Saturday and a Sunday. I decided that's it. I'm not going to church anymore. I'm giving up the Catholic religion. Still haven't gone back to it. And my whole thing around God has changed completely. Still don't have. Someone said the other day they believed in the teachings of Jesus, but they don't have any faith in the Catholic institution. And I thought, yeah, I can relate to that. So it changed my whole thinking around God. Plus, my husband or my former husband was, he decided he was an atheist. So my journey in Al-Anon is really interesting that, the first 10 years I was fighting the concept of a higher power or God. The second 10 years I went looking for it. And then by the time I got into my third, towards the end of my third decade in Al-Anon, I started to come to terms with it.
There's a long, that's how long it can take, isn't it? And I think if you're you've come out of the, without being too opinionated here, come out of the Catholic Church, as those people, the people that have been Catholics have found it the hardest, haven't they, to come to terms with that God thing? Because often they've got a idea of a punishing God or an idea of a, this, the Christian God that then they now understand is an, a bit implausible. No, I shouldn't say that. I don't know all Christians, but the God that they, the understanding that they got as a child is now seeming very implausible. So what did you do about it? You went searching for it. What did you find? Where did you go searching and what did you find?
There's a program, or there's a radio program or a radio station called Light FM, and on a Sunday morning they would have a sermon at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I used to listen to those, not so much all the God stuff, but there was always a different message in there relating to maybe some of what I was thinking about, how I was feeling. I can't remember any of it, and I think I just threw the CDs. I tossed them the other day. But they were sort of, was just in some another source for me to just remind me that, this is what I need. A comfort, I suppose, as well. Yes, I did that for 10 years, about 10 years. And then I realized I didn't need that anymore. Stayed with Al-Anon and yes, just kept going.
Is it too hard, or is it too personal for you to say what your concept of God is? Or is it a changing thing, or
Well, it's in some ways it comes right back to GOD, good orderly direction. But I think what really started to change it was because I love reading and I read a lot of fiction, but I was reading a lot of stories around Native Americans, Indigenous Americans, and the books that I was reading seemed to have, like there's a voice or a conscience. We were talking about Herman's heads before, there's the committee in your head and then there's the conscience. And it was like a, the concept is where if I do something wrong, and I put wrong in inverted commas, then my conscience, my higher power knows that I'm human. I'm going to fail. I'm going to make mistakes. Doesn't matter how many years in the program I've been coming, how perfect I've become. I'm human, and it's the higher power understands. The conscience understands, and it's like this little chat that goes on in your head. You just have a little chat in there, and that's that's my higher power these days.
So it works through your conscience. What then is the, what do you understand as wrong? What is, because it's obviously not sin, right? So when you have done something wrong, wrong by what standard or what measure?
So back to Al-Anon and the ODAT. There is a quote.
Say what the ODAT is to me.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. one day at a time, which is the original daily reader in Al-Anon. And I think somewhere it says, nothing is neither good nor bad. There are just consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I said wrong in inverted commas.
Yes, yes.
So if something's not working and things are going skew, if these are the consequences of what did I say, what did I do, what should I have said, or what could I have said or done?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you work through, well, a quick, some people call it you work the steps, or I just sit there and I think, oh, okay. And some days I'll get an answer very quickly. Other times it'll take me a few days and I think, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
The light bulb goes on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So is that openness again, isn't it, to like I don't like the situation I'm in here. I'm not sure how I got in it, but I'm going to sit and openly and be open to the voice of my conscience. Is that what you're saying? Am I right to say it that way?
Yeah, except it's not that definitive. It's just a case of walking is always good for me. Taking mm-hmm. a walk, often get clarity there, but not always. And so I like to walk as a daily routine.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen all the time, but that's my goal.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I'll just be doing something, cleaning, doing the dishes, and suddenly I just get this insight. I think, oh, you know, we call it the aha theory.
Uh-huh.
You think about it, you put it down, you talk to somebody about it, and you think about it some more, you put it down, and then eventually the penny drops.
Yeah. And that's another aspect of the higher power, isn't it?
Yes.
Whatever that is. Yeah.
Yes.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR Digital Radio and live streaming on 3cr.org.au/streaming. Today I'm chatting to Janina about recovery, long-term recovery from the effects of alcoholism. Janina, you now started to talk a bit about daily practices, and we're talking about long-term recovery. And for me, also in long-term recovery, it's all down to daily practices now. It's sort of understanding, as you say, a walk does me good or whatever, understanding what when you're not following a good orderly direction and when you are, and getting yourself back on the straight and narrow. So can you tell me more about your daily practices?
Well, when it comes to the programs, for instance, it's a daily reading. I used to do a daily reading at nighttime and daytime, like morning and nighttime. These days it's just one. And then it's getting up, just the daily routine and doing exercises, and then putting in a walk if I can, doing my meetings. Well, that's not a daily routine, is it? But really it's just, it's really the daily readings, and then if I need to do anything more, then I do it. These days I'm sponsoring people as well, which is lovely. It's a compliment. Well, talking about compliments, I did one of my sponsors, and I've only been doing that for a few months, she said to me, I want what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
And I laughed, and because, you know, I realise that that's really a huge compliment and it goes really deep. But because I'm not used to accepting such compliments, you know, I have to laugh. And then I said, thank you.
Right.
But, you know, and I remember thinking when I first came into Al-Anon, I looked at these women who sat there quietly and serenely, and I just thought, that's where I'd like to be. I'd love to have that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was willing. I remember sitting there thinking, this is going to take a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
It has.
Mm-hmm.
I don't regret it at all.
Mm-hmm. That's I really relate to that. Yep. What do you think it is that you've got that person is seeing? Now you have to overcome your fear of being immodest.
I think it's just the peace and serenity. So I'm sponsoring somebody else through ACA steps and traits. And she says to me, well, there's just a presence about you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it must be that just that peace, serenity. You know, I don't. Yeah. So this is something that I was talking to with about my with my Elon sponsor the other day, where and going back to my children, where I stopped calling them names. There is a little bit more to a story, but a couple of years later, I discovered that if I got angry and I started yelling, once I yell, I'm pretty much out of control. And so the other thing I had to do was stop yelling. And I haven't yelled since probably about 93, 94.
Wow.
I might raise my voice a little bit,
Yeah.
but I don't yell in that rage like I used to.
You don't allow yourself the luxury of that.
No.
Yeah. Yes, I was talking to the previous guest I've had on the show about the concept of being a rageaholic and the fact that the rage is something you can get addicted to, and that it's a physical, you're getting a physical reward from it in some way. And it's a little bit like the recovering alcoholic might say, I don't pick up the first drink. It's like you're saying, I don't allow myself the first yell.
Well, I've never thought about it in that way. For me, it was just I just know the consequences if I don't, yeah, if I yell, I just know what the consequences are, and it's not very pretty, and so I don't do it. Yeah, I never thought about it in that way. I just thought, you know, we talked about consequences before. So the raging and the alcohol, I was just thinking about that too because I listened to that and I thought that's only one way of expressing anger. I actually have a book that talks about the five different styles of anger.
Oh,
And the
can
oh,
you rattle them off, or is
no,
it
I can't.
no, it's
And
oh.
I don't even know what the five different styles are, other than I can say they're covert and overt.
That's covert.
Yeah,
I think we
passive
all know what
aggression.
co we know what covert anger looks like, don't
Yeah, passive aggression
we?
is the other one. There's the rageaholic. They're the two that stand out, but there are three others as well.
We know some of the behaviors like the silent treatment and
Yep.
the door slamming. I'm not yelling, but I'm slamming this door.
The manipulation, yep.
Oh yeah, the putting, yeah, manipulation. I think we've probably just almost covered them all. Look, we're at the end now. Thank you so much for coming on. Any final comments before we go?
Well, for anyone who's new in the program, as I said early in the program, just keep coming back. Because your life will be very different. And the reward is it's getting that peace and serenity within yourself, which is what I wanted. You know, I wanted a different lifestyle and I
Yes.
got it.
Yeah. You didn't want to be suffering so much.
No.
Well, that is all we've got time for. So thank you very much, Janina, for coming on our show again.
You're welcome.
If you were interested in what Janina had to say, you can go back to our podcasts and the podcast when Janina first came on the show is there. How long ago was that? Was that
One
two?
was just after COVID, and I think there was another time before COVID because I had a session with Bill,
Bill,
and the other person sitting with me was from, he was an adult child and he was from Chile.
Okay, so there's that one. That must go right back to 2018 or something, or
Probably.
before. And then there was another one just after COVID where you came on with Heather.
That's right.
And then there's this one today. So there's plenty more. If you also want what Janina's got, you can go back and listen to some of those shows. If you're concerned about drinking in a relative or friend and would like to find out more about Al-Anon, you can contact them on 1-300-252-666 or go to alanon.org.au. If you're concerned about your own drinking, you can contact Alcoholics Anonymous on 1-300-222-222 or go online at aa.org.au. If the content in any of the conversation you've just listened to has raised questions or caused distress to you, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au. Coming up next, we have Balanwa, hosted by Uncle Taljum. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned now for more radical radio on 3CR. And also a shout out not just to Uncle Taljan but to Gavin, who operate the panel for our Balamwa.
Are you a 3CR subscriber?
We really need our listeners to subscribe to the station. It helps us remain financially independent and is an important part of our community governance.
It's just $40 concession, $80 waged, $150 for a band or organisation, and $300 solidarity.
Become a 3CR subscriber today.
3CR, Radical Radio.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.